view with Cal Ledbetter, LEDBETTER. State Representative and Political Science Professor, University of Arkansas at Little Rock, June 17th, 1974.
When did you get elected to the legislature?
66. Started January 1st, 1967.
Tell us about this Eagleton survey and what happened.
Well, I'll tell you actually what I went out to. A friend of mine named John Beard, who was a state senator, he and I went to Eagleton, I guess, in 1970. And, you know, the Eagleton Seminar they have every year where they have two legislators from 25 states and they alternated. And, you know, we both got real excited about what we saw in Eagleton and, you know, what other states were doing. And so we came back in 1970. We asked the council to go on record as seeing if a study of Arkansas legislation would be feasible. And Rosenthal came down and testified from Eagleton. And then we got an appropriation through in 71, $40,000 to hire. We didn't have to hire a consulting firm, but we could use it for committee expenses and to hire an outside firm if we wanted to. And the 1971 bill set up something called Committee on Legislative Organization, which is supposed to be half public members and half legislators. And this is a group that finally decided to hire Eagleton. Actually, we had competitive bids from four or five outfits and decided to go with Eagleton. And Eagleton came down and made the survey, had a guy staying on the premises here for about 9 months. It worked real well, too. What he would do is we sent out, you know, a questionnaire to all the legislators, which is a typical, you know, Eagleton approach. And, of course, they geared the study to what the recommendations showed. And what he would do, basically, he would write a chapter and then kind of bounce the chapter off the committee in terms of what the committee thought about the chapter and make, you know, reservations along those lines. And, then, of course, the committee studied the final report and decided to which parts to adopt, and then of course in 73 is when we put most of these Eagleton regulations into effect in the 1973 General Assembly. And it just worked really well. I'd say we got about 90% of the Eagleton stuff through.
What was the major thing that did not get through?
Major thing that did not get through was the membership of Legislative Council is constituted as of legislative districts in 1950. And Eagleton recommended, and certainly I supported, the Legislative Council should be constituted as on the basis of 1970 districts, and that was defeated because of so much status quo involved. See, in 1950 we had 7 congressional districts, and of course now we've got 4. And the Legislative Council is set up that 2 people come from each congressional district.
So, what else was there that you didn't get that you wanted?
Eagleton, I thought, came up with one very wild recommendation that they, not wild, I guess it makes good sense academically, but in the legislative perspective, it didn't make much sense. They had recommended that the auditing committee be appointed, in effect, by the speaker from people who were interested in auditing and accounting and bookkeeping rather than being elected as it is now. And the Joint Auditing Committee is a high prestige committee. There's just no way on earth could have got something like that through.
How about salaries? Did they make any recommendations on salaries?
Oh, yes. We've got... it'll be on the ballot now in November to set up an executive legislative compensation commission, which could recommend to the legislature, you know, salaries. Legislature, you know, could not exceed what they recommend, but they could recommend legislature. This was Eagleton, actually Eagleton.
This could be a constitutional amendment.
Yes, right.
In fact, Eagleton, did they recommend annual sessions?
Yes, they recommended 2 constitutional amendments. They recommend one will be annual session, the other will be the salary compensation type.
They're both on there this year?
No, annual session isn't. Now, Eagleton also pointed out, you know, we could do annual session indirectly, but I'm not sure we should because, you know, the public outcry doesn't work. You could actually, instead of adjourning sine die in March, you could simply recess until next January.
Haven't you done that?
Yeah, but not so that it comes out annual session. Yeah, we did that, and that's possible to do, but I think if we did it by subterfuge, the public wouldn't be too terribly enthusiastic about it. But the incredible, you know, the real, what I see is the guts of the whole Eagleton study and what it, I think, worked well is the fact that we'd had in both houses, in the Senate, I think, 26 committees, and in the House, 24, and you served on 4 committees. Some senators served on 6 committees, and there was no coordination of agendas or timing, and you they have committees meeting at conflicting times and so on and so forth. And Eagleton recommendation was that these committees be consolidated down into 10, and more than that, that the committees in the House and Senate be parallel in subject matter and jurisdiction so that when the interim comes around, they can meet as interim committees. We've never had interim committees, you see, in the legislature, except for the legislative council and the joint audit committee. So this has given people, it's given, I think, people in the legislature, the average guy, a chance to participate more. Which
and that has been implemented?
Yes, oh yes, that's implemented now.
And the interim committees are working?
Yes, right. This, they've been
is it a joint interim committee?
It's a joint interim committee. In other words, what you do, you take, for example, education. You take the regular House Education Committee, members on that, and the regular Senate Education Committee. Put them together when the session ends with the Joint Committee on Education. 27 people.
Did you have proxy voting before this? You said some of the senators served on six committees. Did they have a system of proxy
voting? We couldn't. I don't know about the Senate. We couldn't proxy vote in the House. Well, you know, we can pair up, but we can't proxy vote in the House. I don't know about the Senate. Whether they can proxy vote or not.
How are the committees selected?
Committees are selected by the speaker with not the understanding, but in the rules that once you're on a committee that you can't be removed from it. But initially you put on there by the speaker. Now you see on the new committee system, you go on two committees, and they're called A and B committees, 5A and 5B. You go 1A and 1B rather than 4 or 5 like used to be in the past.
And the speaker is elected by a membership?
Right.
Does it rotate?
No. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Matter of fact, it's a very ironclad tradition in Arkansas that the speaker is never re-elected.
It's by tradition, not rule.
Yes. Matter of fact, the Eagleton questionnaire showed, I think, 87 or 92% approval rate on that in terms of the members of the House and Senate who approved of that.
Did the government attempt to buck that tradition?
Occasionally. We had a speaker 4 years ago, a very good speaker, by the way, and being succeeded by a guy who wasn't nearly as good, and he kind of had, made tentative over to us, but just got
when is the speaker elected? Is he elected when you start the new session, or is it in the old session?
Well, now, theoretically, he's elected when the new session convenes, but actually, prior to that time, pledges are lined up, and prior to that time, you know who it's going to be. As a matter of fact, I've been in 8 years, I've never seen a contested speaker's race.
Is that done
contested,
by
contested, you know, in January.
Is that done by caucus?
No. It's done simply a guy decides he wants to run for speaker, and he will write to all members of the legislature and say he would appreciate their support and their pledge is called. See, in Arkansas, with no Republicans, we have a caucus.
Then he collects these written pledges?
That's right.
Is this done after the primary or before?
It's done after the primary. But now you see, technically, the election, the new speaker, for example, won't really take office until January. Now, I suppose if somebody wanted to contest it, they could go in there and fight against him, but he's got enough pledges, to make it, so.
Where did he get his pledges? Before the election?
Yeah. See, after the primary, let's say a guy wants to be speaker. Okay, after the primary is over, you know who's going to be in and who's not. He will start writing whoever his competitor, or two or three of them might be, will also start writing and seeing people trying to get pledges.
As a practical matter, is it waiting that late to start, or does they start lining up support earlier?
Well, probably start a little bit earlier than that, right.
So they start with incumbents who they think are going to get reelected.
That's right. That's right. Usually, though, it is customary you wait until after the runoff primary to start your campaign.
Well, then does he actually move in an interim capacity?
No,
the speaker's
no.
office? Does he start working or anything like that?
No. See, the new speaker, for example, is a guy named Cecil Alexander. Now, he obviously is speaker. He's gotten all the pledges. Nobody can test it, but he will not officially be speaker until the session begins in January, until he's elected for him.
And then he will appoint the committees.
That's right. Well, he'll appoint them anyhow, but I mean.
Those deals aren't cut right now?
They were cut when he was elected, yeah, right, sure.
But he can only appoint people to vacancies on committees.
That's right. Once you're on a committee, you're there. You can't remove
you. All right, now, on the committee, once you're on the committee, how is the chairman selected?
It goes by seniority. But really, in Arkansas, the seniority system just is minimal. I mean, the committee chairman, in effect, it can be overruled by the committee, and he can't pull secret meetings on you and so on. The seniority doesn't amount to a lot in Arkansas. In fact, I think Arkansas has the best aspects of seniority, but none of the worst aspects.
But a speaker in one session, by appointing somebody, can bind the next session of the legislature. Now, speaker cannot remove, is that by rule?
What's that? Yeah, that's by rule. Now, you can always suspend a rule. You can always suspend by 2/3 vote, but it's unlikely you could do that.
One legislature, in effect, is binding others.
In terms of committee composition,
right.
That's right.
Can you do that?
Yeah.
You can.
If you look on rules, continuing rules, which he usually
does. Does the governor have any role in electing speaker?
Now, I haven't seen it. They say that Orville Faulkner did. Now, in the years when I was in there, because I started when the Brockville and came through Dale Bumpers, in those years, no. I understand Faulkner did, sure.
Now, how about the Senate who appoints the committees? Is it Lieutenant Governor or the President Pro Tem?
No, they have a five-person rules committee that appoints the members of committees in the Senate.
And that's the five senior members?
Yeah. That's right.
And then the seniority on the committee?
Yeah. Right. Well, I say in Arkansas, seniority doesn't matter to them, but I mean, the guy is committee chairman, but he'd be easily overruled. And again, on the new rules, every bill that comes to committee has to be heard if the author wants it heard. Some action has to be taken within 10 days on every bill.
Are all the votes on bills open?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes,
public
yes,
record?
You bet.
Is that new?
It's new in the rules. Always traditionally we had operated that way. The only exception was the Senate occasionally would go into executive session, you know, for gubernatorial nominations to various state offices and so on.
They still do that?
Yeah, they can still do that. That's, as a matter of fact, that's in the Constitution, in the Arkansas Constitution.
But they still do it as a matter of practice?
Yes. If they're talking about governor's nominees to various offices, they have to confirm.
Is there any provision for the House to do that?
No, House cannot do that.
Is there any indication that they sometimes discuss other things in those executive sessions?
I don't really know. I assume it'd be possible. I don't really know. It doesn't happen very often. It doesn't happen very often at all. But yeah, the most incredible thing is if you can visualize. Prior to the Eagle thing, you go into a committee in Arkansas, this one we had four or five, and there's no committee staff, absolutely no committee staff. And there's the only person there is a secretary who simply reads the roll. And again, somebody testifies, there's no record in terms of who the person was or what they said. The only record kept of any kind prior to the Eagle situation was simply a record of who voted yes or no on a particular bill, and whether the bill came out do pass or do not pass, do pass is amended. And that's all we ever had in committee.
Now, okay. Yeah. What been any change in staffing?
Yeah, we, for example, we'll have one staff member who next time will rotate between, one staff member will probably handle two committees, and he's there for research. And of course, we've never had any written reports on bills. I mean, I don't know how in the hell the courts in Arkansas tried to figure out what the legislature wanted to do, because there's no record of what the legislative intent was. And this year, the first time, we started written committee reports on bills, too, in a form you use, which you never had before.
But all of it's open.
Yeah. Oh, yes, certainly. Now, there may have been procedure in the old days. I don't know. It was before I came there, where they said sometimes that everything would be open except the vote itself when they go into, you know, closed committee session. But that can't be done now under rules. Now, bear in mind, you can always suspend the rules by 2/3 vote and anything you want to. But it's rare that occurs.
If Arkansas or, you know, if the states were rated again today on the basis of the sometime government report, well, in those five categories, how much change do you think there's been in Arkansas legislation since that report?
Particularly the committee structure. Now, it may change in money, that's on top. I mean, we're still, they have been, I think one of the most incredible things there is our staff increased from 21 to 35 last year, which by Arkansas standards is a big increase. More budgetary people, so we're not limited strictly to the executive branch in terms of what kind of advice we get on budget. Again, we have committee staff for the first time. This article doesn't bring it out, but we also got an appropriation to almost $1 million, about $950,000 for, in effect, legislative facilities. And this is going to mean two new committee rooms for the House and two new committee rooms for the Senate. And these have to be big committee rooms. They can handle 27 people on the interim committee, 20 from the House and 7 from the Senate. And they only had one or two buildings in the whole state capitol that would handle that. So I think, and of course, our preparation can be a lot better because we've had the interim committees meeting. We have pre-filing the bills now. And I'd say we've improved, with exception of salaries, I'd say we've improved in almost every category. I would rank us probably in some place in the middle now. I mean, we're not a wealthy state, so we're not going to be up there with California and states like that, but we sure will be, you know, better than 46.
Do the recommendations include anything about lobbyists?
No, they really didn't. We have a very mild lobbying bill, but Eagleton didn't pick that up at all. Have you all read it, Eagleton, book by Strength of the Arkansas Legislature? No.
How about ethics legislation?
We have an ethics bill that was passed in 1971, a very mild bill. It requires you to list any interest in excess of $5,000 that you have, and also any stock or interest you own in any outfit regulated by the state. you know, telephone company, or again, if your lawyer requires you also to list the stage he's before you appeared in, that type of thing. But there's no, it doesn't require any disclosure net worth or anything like that.
Does it have to the standard report?
Yeah, there's a form you fill in for it. It's very mild. It's not. I don't think so. Our laws, our interest laws, our lobbyist laws should be much tougher too. All it requires you register, and I'm not sure that anybody ever checks that. And the ethics bill should be a little bit stronger too, I would think.
There's no reporting by lobbyists.
No.
Of expenses.
The only thing you see is that somebody is signed up because they're representing, you know, United Automobile Workers, whatever it might be. And it's very, very mild, mild type bill.
How about campaign disclosure? Contribution, campaign contribution,
yeah, that,
disclosure.
That technically you're supposed to disclose any expenditure over $25, and I'd say that's been pretty well adhered to, at least in the.
How about campaign contributions though? Are they
no,
don't have to, no reporting on that.
No, but you do have to report, you know, how much you spent, what categories, and so on and so forth. In Arkansas law, in terms of who can contribute what, is very loose. I mean, there's no prohibition, for example, in Arkansas against a corporation contributing to you if they want to directly as a corporation. You know, Gulf Oil Company, anybody else.
But, and there's no reporting on who contributes to whom?
No, but there's reporting how much you spend and what for. And Governor Bumper is one of the bills that failed. Governor Bumper had a bill, I guess it was 2 years ago, they were trying to limit basically the campaign expenditures for the media. And I guess they figured just too tough and they didn't push it very hard. But we don't have much of that.
Did you run into any problem at all being a state employee running for the legislature?
Well, see, now, when I ran initially, I wasn't. See, this was a private university and converted while I was in the legislature. Yeah, there's a problem, and I wrote the Attorney General to, you know, ask for an opinion on it. And, see, there's been a long tradition in Arkansas that school teachers, of course, do serve in the legislature. As a matter of fact, that's specified in the Constitution they can serve in the legislature. And I wrote the Attorney General, and he gave me an opinion that it's kind of complicated in terms of Arkansas law, but that I was not holding two public offices, that I held, you know, an office as a legislator, but in my position here, I'm simply an employee, and his ruling was that the Constitution only prohibited you from holding two state offices at one time. What I have here is not an office. Legislature is an office, but you know one, but not two. And I get the analogy they use with public school teachers who are permitted and have been always permitted in Arkansas to serve in the legislature.
Is anybody in state government who plays a publicly invisible role, but it's very, very powerful?
You mean lobbyist or what?
Well, I'll give you an example. In South Carolina, the state auditor, who, because of certain ways he functions,
is
an extremely powerful figure, primarily because he plays a key role in preparing the state budget and following it all the way through.
No, of course you have, you know, you obviously have some state employees, very influential, particularly budgetary people, but I would say nobody's kind of a, you know, kind of a pillar of wisdom to whom you come and he knows what needs to be done, how much each agency could have. I don't think it's about like that. Maybe, you know, prior to my time, but not to my knowledge now. As I say, you have a lot of people that build up a lot of expertise, but there's no, you know, one person that, extremely talented person to which everybody would go.
To what degree does home rule assist county and municipal?
Well, it, you know, legally it doesn't exist. I mean, the legislature can take it away. There's one thing that one of the first constitutional amendments I put in was a home rule amendment that didn't make it through committee. And in the new constitution, which was defeated, the home rule was, you know, stressed very heavily. Legislature, you know, classifies cities in terms of cities of first or second class, and they can have city manager forms or city council forms as they want, but home rule is strictly what the legislature gives you. Now, Bumper's passed a bill about 2 years ago that came out of the, in effect, came out of the new constitution, and you know, granted a lot more local home rule rights with proviso the legislature could reverse these rights by 2/3 vote. So that was a substantial improvement.
How much local legislation is there in the legislature?
Oh, hell no. It's, you know, the way you get around it is you simply introduce the bill and say that the bill applies to a county in Arkansas with a population of 25,000 to 25,500. There's only one county of that population. so there's an awful lot of them. Again, salaries for sheriffs, and again, the courthouse people in terms of expense allowances, all these things is locally, our local legislation.
Who writes the county budget in the counties? Is the legislature involved in that at all?
No, not really. You see, the quorum court, the county has its own source of revenue. The quorum court, what the legislature does, basically, the legislature sets limits beyond which county people cannot be paid. But the legislature doesn't pay them. They're paid out of the quorum court appropriation, which comes from the millage tax and things like that, county road tax, et cetera.
Does the county judge, in effect, serve both as executive and administrative roles?
Serves in all three in Arkansas.
He's got the whole damn ball of wax. See, sure, he's basically what the guy is. He's a road builder, administrator. But now, in effect, because the proviso in the Arkansas Constitution that provides for every 200 registered voters, you have one person on the quorum court. Pulaski County, it means we've got 467 people on the quorum court. So the quorum court is just a big mammoth, body that sits there and does whatever the county judge normally wants to do. The county judge appoints a budget committee, and the budget committee, their recommendations are normally adopted by the quorum court. So, in effect, I'd say he's administrator, he's legislator, and also in Arkansas, the county judge sits in on paternity cases. He also sits in on annexation, doesn't sit in, he determines annexation proceedings and custody cases, going back to the old days. So he performs judicial, executive, and legislative functions.
Is that a unique office in America?
I suppose it is.
Now, I presume since he appoints the budget committee that he, in effect, writes the budget.
Yes, he does. And the quorum board in our county is just too big for anybody, to make any meaningful difference in it.
Are they elected?
Yeah, they're elected, 467.
It's bigger than House of
Representatives. That's incredible, yeah. And you see, keep on going.
Is there any move to replace this with a different form?
Yeah, but see, it's in the Constitution that for every 200 voters, you have one member of the quorum court. And
take a new constitution.
Well, or a constitution. Or amendment. There's amendment on ballot by the way, this time would cut the quorum court down from 9 to 15. Each county would have no less than 9, no more than 15.
Do they meet once a year on the budget?
Twice a year. What? And it's a farce, They. They meet at the Robinson Auditorium, which is the biggest area in Little Rock to have. If you have a gigantic rally or something, that's where you have the Robinson Auditorium. That's where the quorum court usually meets.
And so what do they do besides approve the budget?
That's all. Oh, they have the right to, they can notarize things and they can marry people, so on and so forth. And the JPs can. Basically, that's all the quorum court does. They meet for about 3 or 4 hours twice a year.
How would you characterize the relationships between Governor Rockefeller and the legislature and Governor Bumpers and the legislature?
Say relationship with Rockefeller very poor, and it was a very very tragic situation because Rockefeller, of course, had in terms of ideas, I think his ideas and ideals for Arkansas were just fabulous, but he had absolutely no talent with people. Couldn't remember anybody's name. His whole approach to legislation was the idea that if I have a bill that's meritorious, I'm going to introduce it, put it in, and then it'll pass on the merits. I don't need to lift a finger because it's good in and of itself. It just doesn't work that way. And he wasn't really conversant enough with the nitty-gritty of Arkansas politics to really know what to do to get his legislation passed. And see, he had a lot of personal failings since he couldn't remember. he'd meet you when you came in the room and forget your name when you left, that type of thing, which, is not, I suppose, long-term range, the thing's not important, but the legislature, they were offended that he couldn't remember the name. And then they also had this type of situation that when Rockefeller first came in, about 1/3 to 40% of legislators had Republican opposition. And rightly or wrongly, they figured Rockefeller personally was responsible for it. And Rockefeller did pretty lavishly finance a lot of Republican campaigns, so he had a built-in animosity, the party animosity, and a personal animosity, because they felt rightly or wrongly that he, in many cases, financed personally and personally against him. So he had that. Bumpers, comes in, Democrat, sweeps out Rockefeller. Bumpers, very articulate, very good with people, good personality, good memory, knows how to deal in the sense of getting votes and this type of thing. Did a superb job of legislation.
How much,
so in a sense, Rockefeller set it up for Bumpers?
In a way, I think they were the same mold, the same tradition in terms of what they wanted. And
I suppose you could say that, but that's a little bit misleading, because you know Rockefeller comes in with a $130 million tax increase, which obviously nobody's going to buy. But on that kind of basis, you could say, well, he set it up for Bumpers. Well, I don't know anybody on earth besides Dale Bumpers who could have gotten an income tax increase through an Arkansas. And remember, get an income tax increase through an Arkansas, because of the Constitution, it takes 3/4 vote. You had to get 76 votes in the House of Representatives to get an income tax increase, 76 out of 100.
And have Bumpers do it.
He was just affected. Of course, you know, the state was short of money, and he made the equity argument, but he was just damn effective at doing that. And there was a lot of constituencies that want tax increases, like the teachers and the cities and the counties and so on and so forth.
How much truth is there in in what is heard fairly frequently, that when it's said disparagingly, it's usually said all Bumpers really did was come in and implement Rockefeller's program?
I don't think that's true. I don't think it's true at all. I mean, I don't know that Rockefeller made a big push for the kindergarten program. I mean, he supported it, but I didn't say a big push, again, in terms of textbooks. The only thing I would say, where the argument where that holds a lot of credibility, I think, would be in terms of government reorganization. I mean, this was drawn up by a person who had worked for Rockefeller, who came, worked for a year for Bumpers. And Rockefeller put a lot of stress on this throughout the campaign and before the legislature. That's true, but the tax increase, I mean, a man like Rockefeller just simply couldn't get a tax increase through, and Bumpers could. And Bumpers had all kinds of things, too, that I'm not sure Rockefeller even thought about, like the wilderness bill and free textbooks. And
there's free textbooks for high school students, right?
Yeah, see, in Arkansas,
already had it for elementary.
Yeah. But in Arkansas, it's never extended beyond the 8th grade. And, of course, when your textbooks get expensive, it's 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grades. And kindergartens, I mean, my God, that's an enormous step in Arkansas. And, you know, Bumpers got this thing through without having a problem at all.
How do you think Pryor will do with the legislature?
This is somewhat off record, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to...
Yeah.
Not as well as Bumpers. He's not as talented as Bumpers. And he's probably not as good with people's Bumpers. You know, he has served in legislation, he'll have that kind of advantage, but just don't think he'd be that good.
How do you think Bumpers will function in the U.S. Senate?
I think very effectively. He'll be a more effective legislator than Fulbright. If by effective you mean in terms of passing bills, I'm sure he can pass a bill better than Bill Fulbright. Now, I think Fulbright's, you know, great genius, and what we're really grateful for Fulbright for in Arkansas is his, you know, educative capacity. I mean, the fact that he saw, I think, the Foreign Relations Committee, among other things, as a vehicle to educate people. Bumpers probably won't do that as well as Fulbright. But in terms of passing legislation, I'd say Bumpers probably be more effective than Fulbright.
You notice any change in the legislators themselves in terms of their capabilities or qualities since you got in 66?
I don't know. I'm not one to judge that, see, because I came in with reapportionments. And with reapportionment, you got, you know, a lot more urban people in there. And of course, it would probably be better. Somebody make a better judgment who'd been there in the days where it was not reapportioned. See, I hadn't served in the malapportioned legislature.
But has there been any change in the last 8 years?
Oh, I don't think, I wouldn't say any sizable change. I mean, in terms of the competence, the quality, and so on and so forth.
Kind of, and the kind of people.
Yeah. The only change I see is that seemingly people from the more conservative areas of Arkansas, particularly the Delta areas, tend to seem to be more open-minded, I think, than they were maybe five or six years ago.
Is it the same people changing, or is it a different type of person coming?
I think a little bit different type of person, a little bit younger, and just a little bit more open. I couldn't pin that down scientifically. It's just a hunch.
Is that, in your opinion, is that a reflection on just greater black participation in the electorate there?
Well, I think it's a reflection of a change of attitude, really. No, because it seems to me that I think any legislator is probably conscious of the fact that unless he lives in a predominantly black district, he can always, you know, defeat a black. And the black vote, I don't think, has been that important in Arkansas.
Has it made any difference, though, in the question of which white gets elected, if you have a moderate and a conservative?
I suppose it could, but I don't think, you know, really that accounts for the changes. I think the change is just kind of a, you know, a shifting of attitudes and general public acceptance that, you know, blacks should be treated like everybody else and so on and so forth, I would think, anyhow.
What in your opinion, has been the effect of reapportionment?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, I think it's meant that in Arkansas, you know, I think a lot of urban issues, extremely important urban areas, you know, have come to the front. Like I say, for example, kindergartens and textbooks, you want to, you know, put anything, it does, not that it doesn't help rural people too, but these, to me, are classified as two real urban issues. Urban issues like Jishno can now carry, which they couldn't pass. And I think issues like that are, well, I think reapportionment has made a difference in that. Now, it doesn't mean that the urban districts are monolithic. They probably aren't. And in essence, Arkansas will have a single-member district, which means you get a lot of diversity within urban areas. But I think, in general, bills which urban people can support have a much better chance of passed now that wouldn't pass, let's say, 6 or 7 years ago.
Is the relative strength of the legislature relationship to the governor and the executive increased or decreased in the last 8 years?
Well, I think it's decreased because increased because of Eagleton. And I'd say, among other things, one area we stress in the article is the idea of legislative oversight, which we've never exercised effectively. And the joining committees will be, I think, able to do this. And secondly, we beefed up greatly the budget review section of legislative council, which is kind of the legislative counterpart of the governor's staff. So I think, it certainly had equalized it, but I think the legislature is in a better situation than it was, let's say, 4 or 5 years ago.
How about in the post-audit function?
A little bit better, too. For example, we're going this year to program budgeting for the first time. And I think the audit committee has also beefed up its staff, and the budget review section works real closely with the audit committee. So that should help, probably. I think what you find in Arkansas is basically...
But don't you have a situation where both branches have increased because...
Yeah, right.
Because of the executive reorganization and the beefing up and increasing of the...
Yeah, because I think what you have in Arkansas basically is a weak chief executive and a weak legislature. And deliberately so. Arkansas is a typical, you probably know, typical, post-Reconstruction constitution where you want to keep everybody under control and under a very severe restraint, all three branches. So I think both executive and legislative branch, both of them are weak, but I'd say probably legislative branch is much weaker than executive branch.
So it's a relatively strong executive from the standpoint of the governor has.
Well, I'd say vis-a-vis the legislature, he is. The classical political science type thing. It's just simply on the fact that if he's got a bill he's interested in, of course he can bring his witnesses, he's got his bill drafting service to get it done, and so on and so forth, and we can't fight with that.
Or is it strictly an executive budget?
No, not necessarily. It's executive in the sense that, he submits it, but then legislative council does. Legislative council holds pre-budget hearings and, in effect, determines the budget. And then when the session begins, legislative council doesn't exist and joint budget then comes into play. So it's executive budget in the sense the governor submits it, but there's a lot of legislative input into it and influence on it before it actually is introduced.
He submits it to the legislative council,
right, in October. See, in October, November, and December.
And the council is just staff people.
No. Now, the legislative council, these are people from the legislature.
They are legislators.
They have a staff, of course, but they're legislators. Now, there's always confusion.
When it goes through that process, then does it go back to the governor?
Well, no, when it goes through that process, they make a recommendation on what the governor has proposed.
To the legislature.
Excuse me?
No, I understand this. The governor submits to the legislative council.
Right.
His budget recommendations.
Right.
And they look at it, hold hearings and so on. And now they make recommendations on that to whom?
Well, they'll make recommendations on that. They'll put their own recommendation in there, cut his down. They'll make recommendations eventually to the legislature, see.
And it goes from the legislative council, which is both represents House and Senate?
House and Senate, right.
This equally?
Is the budget that he submits in January the same one that he has submitted to the council in October, the governor?
Well, it could be. Now, it depends on how he wants to change it. But the thing is...
But he has those recommendations before he actually submits it to the legislature.
That's right. Plus you have this. Now what takes place in January is something called the Joint Budget Committee comes into effect. Now, this consists of 7 members of the House and 5 members of the Senate who are members of the legislative council. Now, the rule of joint budget is that... if the legislative council has recommended an appropriation bill, then joint budget cannot reopen that bill or change that bill except by 2/3 vote. Now, they do have a proviso whereby if a new governor comes in, this proviso doesn't apply to him. So, in effect, legislative council is enormously influential.
How many people on the legislative council?
27, 28.
And how are they selected?
Well, this is one you remember talking about. Congressional district, and then some at large, and one's appointed by the governor. and 27, 28 people on council.
Is it a practice for the governor to take those recommendations and include them in his budget when
yes.
he submits it verbatim?
Well, basically, unless there's some big hassle, you know. And usually, legislative council is pretty deferential in terms of what he wants, not always.
Is there that much difference between what he recommends and what the council recommends?
No, not that much, really. But again, the council can assert itself if it wants to.
Let me go back just a minute on procedure. He submits a budget to legislative council that reviews it, makes recommendations, then it goes to a joint budget committee.
When the session begins, legislative council ceases. Legislative council doesn't exist anymore.
Okay.
The session begins. But in effect, the successor agency is the joint budget committee, who are, they're 12 people, but all of whom are members of legislative council.
And by two-thirds majority, they can change the legislative council
recommendations.
Oh, yeah. Then it goes from them back to the governor, to the
Then it comes from the joint budget. Joint budget reports it out to the floor.
All that is, Jack, is a pre-hearing.
The
governor doesn't have to pay a damn bit of attention to what the council does. He can do anything he wants to. What they're doing is they're having his hearings on his pre-budget proposals. That's all.
But you see, what the council decides is important, because budget, in effect, is bound by what the council has decided. Not actually, but by...
But it doesn't. You see, it binds the legislature more than it binds the governor, in effect.
In a lot of cases, what you'll have sometimes, you'd have a bill coming out, and the bill will be listed as the governor's recommendation, legislative council recommendation. In some cases, if they change the recommendation, you'll even have a joint budget recommendation on it. And not many like that, because usually joint budget takes legislative council recommendation.
But otherwise, you have those first two columns.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And they're very similar.
All right. Then when it goes to the floor, then what?
Well, the joint budget, during the last 30 days, the joint budget runs the whole thing. In effect, the chairman of joint budget will get up and go through the appropriation bills one by one. And it's very tedious, because in Arkansas, again, because of a screwed up constitutional amendment passed during the height of the Depression, appropriation bills have to have a 3/4 vote in both House and Senate.
And they're also all line item, aren't they?
They're all line item, yeah.
It's not a single appropriation bill, it's a series.
That's right.
You get three. You get the governor. You get the council. Then you get the action. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, now when finally the bill.
But there's not a finance committee.
The thing is though the joint budget is crucial. In other words, if the governor puts in a bill and the joint budget says no, then the governor might as well kiss goodbye. He's not gonna get it. So in that sense, the joint budget is really called.
But they aren't separate finance committees in each house that go through it.
No, joint budget is joint. 7 House, 5 Senate.
It's a joint committee out of the Legislative Council.
That's right.
It's a legislative group. It's not a House Senate.
That's right.
Right, but then when it goes to the floor, does it go to the floor of the House first and then to the Senate?
Well, either way. There's no big thing about that, but it's always a joint budget bill sponsored by the joint budget normally. Now, again, if I, as an individual, have my own bill, let's say I get something passed and I want appropriation for it. Of course, it's not in the... There's been no pre-budgetary hearings on my bill, and the governor hasn't done anything about my bill. I've got to go before the joint budget, get the joint budget to approve my recommendation. Now, one thrust of the Eagleton thing was that the joint budget really was determining, and it's true, was determining too much of what the House and Senate did, because you obviously didn't have enough time to keep up with all these hundreds of appropriation bills that come in, and you simply relied on the judgment of the joint budget. And if you've got 12 good people, fine. If you don't, get in trouble. So one Eagleton recommendation was the joint budget be expanded to include more than just the 7-5. It's been expanded now to 15 people. Two, by the way, two from the Joint Audit Committee. Two of the new three would be from the Joint Audit Committee. But actually, during the last 30 days, that's all you do is pass budget bills. And it is in essence a situation where you rely completely on what joint budget recommends.
And who designates the members of the joint budget committee?
Well, the 7 members of the House are designated by the Speaker, and the 5 members of the Senate are designated by the President pro tem.
From the membership of the Council.
From the membership of the Council.
And these other three will be designated out?
Let me see. How we had a different arrangement for those. We had one selected large and one by the joint. I've got exactly how they're a little bit different.
Okay, the joint budget committee, and it's really the key
damn
in the
right.
legislature.
You're damn right.
And once you're on, is that like the other committees? Once you're on that, another speaker can't take the oath?
No, that's not the same thing. Because joint budget could rotate. For one thing, you always have to be in legislative council to be on joint budget. But,
Is that usually rotated, or once you get on the legislative council?
No, once you get on it, normally you stay. except sometimes you're defeated, and you know, sometimes the membership of the legislative council rotates. When I say defeated, I don't mean defeated election. Sometimes you're defeated election to the legislative council, for example.
So you're elected to the legislative council from the House or from the Senate.
Right.
The membership elects to that.
That's right. And, well, not exactly. It's two people are elected from each congressional district.
It's done by district caucus.
But then they're also some at large, so in effect, membership does it too.
They're elected by district caucus, though?
That's right. And some at large. And so it's, I suppose, executive budget, but there's a lot of legislative input, I guess, into the thing.
You see any basic changes in the legislative structure or operation in the next 6 years?
Yeah, I ain't getting much thought. I've been so trying so much to get the Eagle and things in, it's probably all we've been sore about, say, the next 2-3 years in Arkansas. And, yeah. You know, it's just amazing we got as much through as we did. I just, you know, I wouldn't have figured initially, just one of these things that happens to come off right for some reason, just hit the right historical time and work real well. I would never in my life have figured the Senate would consolidate itself down to 10 committees, because every senator, you know, the old system was chairman of one committee, maybe chairman of two committees. And I just never in my life figured they would do that. But there's so many bugs. I mean, the Joint Budget Committee is really, not the Joint Committees aren't exactly working as we anticipated. We thought they would do most of the studies in the interim. And they're doing half the studies, and the council doing half the studies. And we need to, you know, work these kind of things out. I mean, I think we've got a real adjusting process in the next 3-4 years to adjust to the Eagle recommendations, Joint Committees, staff people, and so on and so forth, which we never had to do before. And see, we got, you don't realize how bad the Arkansas situation was. Well, it still is bad in terms of salary, but, you know, you serve there for $100 a month. You don't have any offices. You don't have any secretarial assistants except a pool there. It's got about 10 or 12 girls and maybe 2 or 3 are good, and everybody learns who the 2 or 3 good ones are. And you don't get any, they give you about 5 rolls of stamp, but that's, you know, that's about it. And as I say, in the past, we never had any committee staff, so you really didn't have any outside, you didn't have any access to any type of impartial information. The only information you had on bills in the past was what the interest groups would give you, or what you could pick up on your own. And we've come a long way from there. We've also put into effect interim expenses, which we haven't had until 1971. If the legislator can incur expenses up to $250 per month. And I once had, at the Eagle thing, I ate with this guy from the state of Michigan there, annual sessions, and how he made $20,000 a year, and he had AA, and he had an office, and he had a personal secretary, and he had got $600 a month in terms of allowances, and he was complaining because the state of Michigan wouldn't set up a branch office for him in his hometown, you know. And I said, well, come down to Arkansas and see what the other half, how the other half lives, I guess. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to do anything about money. You know, the public is terribly resistant to raising salaries, legislative salaries. In Arkansas, this catches the state constitutional officers, too. As you probably know, the governor makes $10,000 a year and the attorney general $6,000 a year.
Has the press taken any active interest in that one way or the other?
You mean salaries? I don't know. Not so far, but of course, you know, these aren't going to be voted on until November. It's a little bit, a little bit soon for the press to be active. The press, by the way, very, very favorably inclined towards the Eagleton report. I don't think I saw anything negative on the Eagleton thing, Tom.
Did they recommend anything specifically on salaries as far as amounts or just procedure?
They recommended. It wasn't a very strong recommendation. They recommended basically, I think, annual salary about $4,500. Remember, this was done about 2-3 years ago.
That was that tied in with the idea of annual session?
Yes, right. I think the Eagleton wanted to couple both together, wanted to couple the annual sessions with the salary increase, you know, figuring the budget might buy.
They still recommend the 60 days?
No, they want an annual session, too.
With no limit?
Well, what do we have on that? I think they recommended, because annual sessions, 9-day limit extended by 2/3, I believe it was. I had to check it, I'm not sure about that. I think the committee is just going to put a limit on it just for sustainability purposes, nothing else.
What would be the strongest, most powerful groups in the state?
Well, I'd say, Chamber of Commerce, Labor, and Teachers probably. I'm probably not the best one to ask because, you know, I come from an urban area and the Farm Bureau is not strong in you know, this county, because this county is an urban county. I expect throughout the state the Farm Bureau is very, very influential.
How about banks and utilities? Insurance.
I'd like to see.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I was asking about banks, insurance, utilities.
Utilities really are not terribly active. They patched up their fight with the co-ops about 10, 12 years ago, so there's no great division between co-ops and utilities. They're regulated by the Public Service Commission, but utilities really aren't a factor in the old. They used to be in the old days, not so much anymore. Bankers, not terribly involved. They were terribly active about 4 or 5 years ago when we passed a bill allowing the state to collect interest on money, you know, deposited with banks. And banks were dividing the state on a bank holding bill, but I wouldn't classify them as real shakers and movers who are interested in what goes on in the legislature. They're interested only if their own interest is touched, and I don't think that they go out and seek people because the interest is that important. Seek people to run as ineffective bank candidate, what it might be. Labor always has a list of bills they want. Teachers always got a list of bills. Farm Bureau, not so much. Chamber of Commerce usually have a counter list too.
State Chamber.
State Chamber, right. And now, again, this is not true in my county. My county is not a typical county, but I'd say probably throughout the state that the county officers are an effective lot. County judges, county sheriffs, county clerks. Not in my county, because my county is an urban county.
How do you assess Booker's role in vetoing that bill that would return 7%?
I don't know really the maneuvering behind it.
My question is this. There are two versions we've heard. One is that